Yes, sir. Dieter and Hutch alive and somebody new is kicking. Wow. As the title of the stream says, that escalated quickly, Jake. We went from zero to 100. We went from zero to 49-49 right now.
Yeah. I would just like to clarify, I am alive. I made it back from the East Coast alive, despite contracting an illness.
What'd you get, the bubonic plague?
I think I just had too many bagels and I feel bloated. That's probably it. But yeah, the 49ers are not alive from what I can tell.
It's hilarious. So you picked up an illness. You were nowhere near the 49ers facility. So imagine how bad it could have been if you had been around. Yeah. I mean, you could have only added to the mischief and the mayhem. I'm sure New Orleans, Louisiana, you know, a bastion of cleanliness and good health will I'm sorry. I'm sure that will do just fine for him. Should we get into some news and notes? Because that might take up the entire goddamn show.
Yeah, folks. So I don't know if you've heard, but some things have transpired. Some things have transpired with the 49ers. I think we should probably start with injuries, right? That's the most logical way to go.
All right, buckle in.
So I'm just gonna read off. We don't have Thursday's injury report just yet.
No,
but it's funny.
Chaos.
It's funny because like even in week one, the 49ers injury report when everyone was practicing was longer than like any other team in the leagues.
Right.
But so we've got Nick Bosa doing rest. Nothing wrong there theoretically.
As told. Yeah.
Christian McCaffrey also resting. He's got a calf injury, but he's just resting.
It's just rest.
Trent Williams knee. But again, he's just resting. We'll get into Trent in a bit because that was ugly. Mm. The biggest one, obviously, Brock Purdy out. He's out. I mean, they have not confirmed status as yet, but he's not playing.
No, John Lynch said on KNBR this morning that he is out.
Okay, well, he's out.
That's not confirmed to the NFL, but like, let me put it to you this way. He's out, and he's out for maybe a while.
He's out for 2 to 5 weeks, according to... I love when NFL Network just occasionally drops like, oh, so, yeah, just a little update. It's 2 to 5 weeks.
Yeah. By the way, can we just note, long shot to play turned into out... I mean, and it's not as if Kyle lied, right? He is, in fact, a long shot to play in the same way that I'm a long shot to become the president of Kazakhstan. And... the same thing, too. Like, we ask, like, could this be a multiple-week thing? And he's like, sure. It's like, I guess everything could be a multiple-week thing. So he didn't lie, but, yeah, I think it was Rappaport being like, they're expecting him out for 2 to 5 weeks, which is just, you know, bad to catastrophic in distance, right?
It's great. I think it's great. I think they'll be totally fine. I think Moose Johnson went on one of the radio stations, was like, there should be no drop off because they're the same player.
Oh,
I went,
Jesus.
Okay. All right, Moose. I like your work, but that's not great.
I do enjoy the Moose, who has consistently moved down the Fox hierarchy, the herd hierarchy, if you will. That would be, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. Let's put a pin in that because,
I'll rip through the rest of these.
Jesus.
So Juwan Jennings also did not practice today. Yetur Gross-Matos knee did not practice.
Yeah.
He seems like that's just going to be his thing where he's just not going to practice and then
it's a good play. Gig if you can get it, man.
Seems great. The bigger questions are like Ben Bartsch, knee, elbow. I would expect he plays.
Yep.
And then you've got Jordan James limited still with the finger.
Yep.
And Dom Pooney. He was a full participant, so he's going to be fine. Jordan James could be interesting. Juwan Jennings could be interesting. We got a lot to sort through. I'll mention briefly with the Saints. Safety Julian Blackman didn't practice with a shoulder. Talese Nwaga started tackle at a horror game. He did not practice with a knee injury. And then Trevor Penny, backup guard, did not participate with a toe injury. Chase Young, former 49er, did not practice. Yeah. Did not play week one with a calf injury. So those are the injuries.
And to be fair, Chase Young makes no sense in this scheme, and we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. Two names I want to hone in on. Yetur Gross-Matos had a not-so-small role for this team in week one, as Robert Saleh has decided to become a madman and just try some stuff out. He watched some Mike McDonald tape, and he's like, I like the cut of this guy's jib. Let's do that. And so Yetur Gross-Matos and Mykel Williams were just constantly rotating in at tackle, and Listen, I didn't mind it. It certainly leaves a level of susceptibility, which we saw the Seahawks actually take advantage of. They'd hurry the Niners up, both circumstantially and I think by choice, at certain junctures to keep those guys on the field at tackle. But Yetur Gross-Matos, like, for somebody who we've never actually seen, like, I was thinking about this on the drive home from Santa Clara yesterday, because goddamn that traffic. But I don't think I've ever looked Yetur Gross-Matos in the eyes. Like, I don't know what he looks like. It's not. It's weird. That's weird at this juncture. He's been on the team for a year plus. I couldn't pick Yetur Gross-Matos out of a lineup. Like, unless he's wearing a number 94 jersey, I don't know what he looks like because he's so constantly injured. And yet, this seems to be a fairly important player on this defensive front.
Yeah, and I thought he had some moments that were pretty solid. He's bendier than I think Michael is. Which helps in that sort of stand-up role. But, yeah, it was interesting. Salah really just, he rotated. He's like, we got a lot of good defensive ends. Sam Oh had a pretty big role, too. I think he forced at least one fumble.
Yeah, limited snaps, but he forced that fumble. And I thought he, like, legitimately, as a D-end, I thought he looked better than Michael. He wasn't being used like Michael. But, like, if you're just saying D-N reps versus D-N reps, I thought that Michael had some decent and some bad strong side defensive end reps. I thought Okwonu gave you nothing but consistently solid in two cases, great reps at that spot. So wouldn't be shocked if there was some more Sam Okwonu in our life after that game. Can I also just get in a quick little statement on Juwan Jennings? His shoulder, much like himself, cannot separate.
Ooh.
Thank you. Nice. You're all week. Thank you.
Yeah.
They keep saying that he's like got a chance to play. Like, what are we talking about? He missed the entire game. I guess it's nice that his shoulder isn't catastrophically injured, but like the dude takes contact on every snap. Like, he plays like a tight end that's out wide. Like, you can't be out there with a bad shoulder.
I think the thing is
playing that kind of football.
It's all an incentive-based contract. So he's for him, he's like, well, I'm going to play because that's how I'm going to get paid.
I can appreciate that mentality. Like, that's some great warrior shit. But, like, I can't imagine he's very useful to the San Francisco 49ers with this injury. Like, a shoulder injury for a wide receiver, pretty catastrophic, considering that your job as a wide receiver is to catch a football, sometimes thrown above your head. Don't think he's doing that anytime soon. And in his case, block a lot. I mean, there are amazing drugs out there. And
that's
I'm
what
sure
I was going for.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'd like to know what he's on. You know, shove it in every vein in my body, and let's just coast through the rest of the day. Listen to some yacht rock, you know?
Speaking of, anybody listening to Steely Dan or I forget, Bobby, what's his name? Bobby's got the beautiful song, whatever. Bobby Caldwell.
Oh, there Bobby Caldwell. Bobby Caldwell's incredible. By the way, just quick thing here. This is a personal aside. There's the Yacht Rock Radio on Sirius XM. I'm a big fan of the Sirius XM because I have two kids. I have to parent them, and that requires some semblance of attention, though less seems to be more with the two-year-old these days because, goddamn, she got the gift for gab from her dad. Just shut the fuck up. And so I can't sit and, like, watch all the games that I want live. I have to watch most of my stuff when everyone goes to sleep, recorded, and there's positives and negatives to all that. But suffice it to say, if there's something that I'm interested in live, I got the earphone in, I got Sirius XM on, and Sirius XM has the Yacht Rock Radio, and that's kind of a thing, and shouts to Bill Simmons for, like, inventing that term. But it's Soul Yacht. Soul Yacht is the channel you really want.
Interesting.
You don't want these white guys doing it. It's Michael McDonald, and then just, like, classic R&B singers with some soul yacht rock. That's the good stuff. That if you're hanging out by the pool, if you got all the Juwan Jennings injections in you and you're just taking her easy for the day, you want the soul yacht channel.
So when we went to this wedding in upstate New York this weekend, there's a Corvette show at the same hotel we're all staying at, so it's
classic.
All 70-year-olds, and it poured and rained and they were devastated. But what happened is, like, so we got back from the hotel after it rained, middle of the afternoon before the wedding starts. And so we go down to the pool. There's a hot tub.
Hot tub.
Big dude in a hot tub. And we're like, whatever. It's a big enough hot tub. We're just going to hang out. They're all part of the wedding. We don't know them, but we'll make some friends. He's black. I'm sure it was that same radio station. Sure it was Soul Yacht. Soul.
It's Yacht unbelievable. Soul. 10 out of, I don't remember what it's called. You'll know. You'll know. Yeah. Search it on SiriusXM. Highly by recommend SiriusXM.
By the way, I feel like we should, speaking of Soul, Destiny, Jake Moody is gone. It was a rough transition, but I think Jake Moody.
Who could have seen it coming, Jake?
Yeah, who could have foreseen that?
Two things that stood out for me from Kyle's comments on that yesterday, right? Because they did it after Kyle spoke on Monday, and then they did it so that there was a lot of time for it to sort of gestate out there. And then Kyle goes up to the podium. We're not asking about that because the starting quarterback's injured, and you're starting tight ends out, and all that stuff. And then we finally get around to like, oh, yeah, you remember how you were supposed to cut your kicker sometime in the preseason? Right. You just got around to doing that. What went into that? And Kyle gave two answers. One, I was afraid. Apparently, he at one point had run into, and he referred to him as the head coach, his dad's office when they were in Washington.
Yep.
And demanded that they cut their crappy kicker. And
Graham
his
Goodell,
dad's,
I believe.
Yes, and his dad said, "No, we're not going to do that because he's very talented. You have to give him time." And eventually, they did cut him, and then he turned into a very, very good kicker. We suspected that's the reason why the Niners weren't doing this, which is, by the way, a terrible reason, as the great texted me.
Right.
It's like hockey goalies. Once you lose it, it's gone. Like, you got to toss them around. It's a psychological sport. The second part is, he's like, yeah, it looked like he lost his confidence. You just noticed that? You just noticed that the kid lost his confidence? You just picked up on that, Kyle. My goodness, that's why they made such a big goddamn deal and pumped up his tires so much after that stupid Raiders game, because they were like concerned about his confidence.
Well, I think they were literally just trying to pump him up and be like, hey, he's so good. This is going to change his career. Nope. I mean, that missed field goal was...
It's inexcusable. And Milo with the great broke cleared waivers. I mean, it's like, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if I'm him, I'm taking a week and just going somewhere warm.
He'll be fine. I mean,
he will carve out probably a really nice career, which is what they're saying. Like, they're like, devastating part is like he's going to figure it out somewhere else and it will drive us insane.
Yeah, we're going to look like assholes for cutting him. And it's like, no, you won't, because he's never going to be the guy that you want him to be. As a member of the San Francisco 49ers, it would have been absolute malpractice. And I thought they were going to do it. Like, deep down somewhere in my soul, I'm like, oh, they're going to have him kick at home. And if he missed a field goal there, there would have been a riot. Like, Niners fans don't get like that, you know, January 6th about much. They would have stormed the field. Like, they were booing him in the preseason, and they were just in doing that. And, you know, we keep calling him a kid. He's a 25-year-old man who's fine.
Meanwhile, Eddie Pinheiro's like, I mean, they don't value me. I'm just a guy. So if I miss, I'm gone. That's what you need. You need, like, a veteran who's, like, seen the other side of kicking and is just like, I'm just the guy people bring in and maybe I'll survive a year. Maybe I won't. I don't really care either way.
I know the game. And this is the game that 20-something other teams in the NFL play every year. The Niners thought they were getting one over on the league, being like, hey, we got our guy for the next decade. You fools thought we were idiots taking this guy 99. He's going to be our leading scorer for the next 10 years, who looks like an idiot now.
Right.
And I defended the pick at the time.
I did too.
If he was the guy, right?
I thought if you were going to take a kicker, he was the only one worth taking, and the Patriots were going to snag him immediately after. And they knew that. And so... But they also set themselves up in a position where they had to draft a kicker, which is like, did you really have to approach it that way? Probably not. I thought, but again, I defended it. I was wrong. I genuinely thought that like it was a solid pick for a kicker. Again, I think he was the only picker in the draft worth really drafting. But good lord,
I liked him McPherson in that draft as well. But Moody was far and away the number one option, and.
And he
99.
Did have like insane, like I know he was like shaky his rookie year, but he did produce at like a pretty outstanding level.
I was having a conversation yesterday, and it was like, you know, he was pretty good that year they went to the Super Bowl. And I'm like, and what about the time he missed the extra point in the Super Bowl, which kind of loomed large?
Right, hit the 50-plus yarders and then missed the extra point.
I mean, the classic Jake Moody experience. I don't give a damn if you can hit the big ones if I can't trust you to hit the short ones. So,
yeah,
listen, this is how every other team does it. And it's not going to be terribly fun, but at least it'll be clear cut. Like, if
you know what is fun,
sucks,
though,
they cut them. Yeah.
You know what is fun, Dieter?
What's fun?
The Mac Jones experience.
It's on. It's on. By the way, that's the Hutch Report. We're just going to have Jake run through the headlines, and you should subscribe to his Substack, which is currently on the page. Okay. Back to our general
I'll be getting into offensive and defensive line grading and putting them out there throughout the year, which should be fun.
Looking forward to that. Mac Jones is your starting quarterback. Kyle Shanahan gets to live his dream. This is the moment Kyle's been waiting for since.
Sorry, Jan. Yes, Pro Bowler Mac Jones.
That's right. Apologies. We do need to refer to him consistently by his title. His reputation precedes him. Wow. I get it. Listen, we talked about this because it was a fun buzz topic in the offseason. You can do a hell of a lot worse for a backup quarterback. Like, this is not like last year when you had your backup quarterbacks and going into the game, you're like, how much will they lose by?
Right. You're like, maybe they'll win one of these four.
And that was stretching it.
That's what I texted Dieter today. I sent him a screenshot of the next four games because Kittle's out for those four and probably Purdy's missing at least the next two, right?
Yes.
Can they go 2-2 over their next four? That's really the question.
Well, we talked nonstop in the preseason, not just about McCorkle and the somewhat hilarity of all of it, but also the first five games and how vital they were to setting the tone for the season. And it seems ridiculous. They did win on Sunday. We forget, they're 1-0 in the division. That game is going to prove to be huge, and that's in the best case scenario here moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
They have Arizona after the Saints. They have the Rams on a short week. I would expect, given short week, I can't think that Brock is going to play before week six, right? So you have the Saints, you have the Cardinals. If Brock isn't back for Jacksonville, he's out for Jacksonville and the Rams, is my guess, based on the way that they typically treat injuries over the short week. I'm not saying that the season is over on spec, right? Like, there is a way. Like, we've seen this team start 3-5 and go to the NFC Championship game. But the whole conceit of the season was our veteran players, and specifically our, McCaffrey, Kittle, and Brock on offense are going to be so good that they'll carry this defense, which has five rookies in serious roles, including three in starting roles, going to carry that defense up until they kind of get their act together.
Yep.
And then, hey, now they can give up a little bit and the defense can take on a little bit more. And this would be a team that in the best case scenario is peaking at the right time. And that's the Rams model. That could still happen, but now the defense has to be what it was in week one against a Seattle offense that kind of didn't look like it knew what it was doing yet. And maybe I gave too much credit to Clint Kubiak.
Probably.
Because he sucked last year. Kenneth Walker's not very good, and maybe they fixed that problem, and it was kind of just JSN.
Right.
But, and Robert Saleh threw a bunch of stuff that I can't imagine Clint saw coming, but that defense played really well in week one, and it looks even better on the film. Now that has to be their standard.
I'm not really worried about the defense. I'm not. I think it's sustainable, depending on injuries, right? Like if they get hurt, right, they're screwed. But Fred Warner looked
unbelievable.
Obviously, I just need to take a second and talk about how insanely good Fred Warner looked with what was it? His nose got broken or something, or
the pebbles up his nose. I think he got his chin strap went up, and then a bunch of pebbles went up there too.
Oof.
Yeah,
I hate
tough
the sound
dude.
Of that. Yeah, no, and then
you immediately feel it just saying the words.
And then he and Winters were flying around. That's not to equate Winters with Warner, but like Winters looked damn good. Yeah. I thought the D-line.
Awesome.
Listen, were they perfect? No. Is there a lot of improvement, a lot of figuring out? Yeah. But like they have enough beef and enough athleticism right now that I'm like even Jordan Elliott had some moments that impressed me more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
I do think it's sustainable. Also, Mustafa's going to come back by week 5-ish or okay. so. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. But he'll come back at some point. Pinnick wasn't bad at all.
I thought he was the weak link, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I a lot of times you're watching Pinnick on the All-22 and you're like, and what is it you are right. doing here? Whereas right. the rookie who was everywhere all at once. Yeah. What is it? What was the name of the movie? Everywhere and
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That was Marquis Siegel in week one. I'm having to hold myself back from saying some really strong things in the most positive direction possible.
Yeah. Like,
he looked like somebody who had been out there for 10 years, knew everything that was happening five steps before it happened. It was preternatural. It was precocious, to say the least. I talked to him yesterday. He's a pretty soft-spoken kid. Easy to get along with, easy to talk to. You can just tell that the synapses fire at a different level with him, because most of the time you come in and listen, you guys know how I talk. It's in a million spots all at once, right? Jake has to deal with it on a daily. You guys just have to deal with it a couple times a week. And I just try to have conversations as opposed to being very pointed right. with the questions. This is not a compliment to me. Like, he was able to synthesize all the bullshit I was spewing very quickly, summarize it, and then tail it off. He was a great podcast co-host. If it wants to be Dieter Hutch and Marquise, I think that we'd have something.
I would love it.
He's all the things that we had heard from the coaching staff about his ability to recognize and things. That is not lip service. I caught him. I walk in the locker room. I catch him on the pad. He's going through rep after rep after rep on the iPad. I kind of want to just look over his shoulder and get all that good tape again, because it is cut up a little bit differently for those guys because it puts the play and stuff beforehand. He was going over that. Now, I did catch him on TikTok after that, but like that's neither here nor there. It was impressive. I get it. I get why they put this much trust in him. And in all the ways that they used him, I mean, that's the only word that can be used. They trust him. They trust Mark. They trust Michael. That's a huge deal for the future. I don't know if that burdens them in the present or not, but there's really no alternative moving forward.
No, there's not. No, there's not. And they didn't even try Jair, which is like pretty telling, which is, I think, what we sort of expected going into the season. He just hasn't been trustworthy. But I think the point is, like, I think the defense can keep them in games. I really do believe that, even, you know, without Mustafa coming back yet. Like, I do think they have enough pieces. Now, if either one of Renardo Green or Diamador Lenore gets hurt, that might fall apart in an instant, right? So we'll get into that. But, like, I think the defense can sustain them with these next few games, until Kittle and Purdy and those guys come back, to at least give them a chance in all four. I think personally, I expect them to lose both division games, but Milo mentioned before, Kyler looks not great.
Looked like dog shit. But I think there was a reason why.
Yeah.
Dante, this is regarding Marquis Siegel. He's just one of those guys who gets better in the pros once they leave college. I mean, I asked him about it. I said, I don't know how to put this kindly, but what? We didn't see any of this on your K-State tape.
No, because we're watching Jacob Parrish, and we're like, what? I don't know. And it's not that he was, that Siegel was bad, but you're just like, I don't really see much.
I mean, it was the joke that I had about Marquis Siegel is that nobody gets into the frame at the last second faster, but he was never around plays. And we went and we watched a lot of K-State All 22, and he just didn't. I mean, they moved him around a bit, but he was a third safety, and he's like, yeah, that three safety thing probably wasn't indicative of the pro game and what it is I could do. It's like, first off, I didn't put those words in your mouth, but What a interesting quote, which is, you know, going in a column. I was just floored with that tape, and I'm curious now that there is that tape, right, and the mystery of what Robert Saleh wants to do, because I doubt that it's going to get terribly bespoke for every offense they play. The mystery of what Saleh wants to do, a little bit less mysterious now. I wonder if qualified teams, and I don't know if I include the Saints in that, can attack a rookie, strong safety that's moving everywhere, and Pinnick behind him, by the way, who looks susceptible, if I'm being frank, and then Mykel Williams, which I did think that Seattle was, their intent was to attack him, and Yetur Gross-Matos when they got on the interior, and they did a fairly decent job. He held up pretty strongly, though. Like, I wonder if they're not going to be looking at a D Winters, right, as maybe the weak link, but now start looking at Siegel and Mykel as like, okay, here's the marks. Let's go after them and what that looks like moving forward. But I, if I'm just guessing right now, I think that bodes well for the 49ers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they don't have a lot of weak links. I think if you're going to try and attack Siegel, it's going to bite you. I really just think this is like a competent defense, and Mykel had ups and downs, but like he wasn't a liability by any stretch. You want more polish from him as a pass rusher, but he was pretty stout. He was pretty solid, just provided competency, which they just have lacked, gave them a lot of flexibility in what they could do. Like, weirdly great when Saleh peeled him off and dropped him into coverage. Looked like kind of comfortable out there.
Did you see that rep where he flipped his hips with Arroyo out in the flat?
Yeah, crazy. Crazy. He's a freak.
And by the
He's,
way, like I want to make it clear, like, this dude is not skinny. Like, he is one of those, and maybe this is, you know, a little bit of back in the day when I was doing high school football recruiting and feeding all these prospects, but like, there are certain football players at every level, and the higher the level you are, the more, or the less pronounced it is, but when Nick Bosa walks into a room, you're like, oh, that's different, because he's a block of concrete. When Trent Williams walks into the room, you're like,
There's a general aura.
Right. Brock carries himself in such a way that now, I mean, that's contextual, but you would have never guessed beforehand. But when Mykel Williams walks through the middle of the locker room, you're like, that guy, I want to pick that guy. It is very much, you know, a little bit of backyard or school yard football where you're like, I'm going to take the tallest, widest one who looks like he could jump over all of these lockers. And I guess Robert Saleh fell for the same trick. And again, a lot of people want to go in on the PFF grade. I'm out on PFF after week one. I don't know who was grading that game. It isn't a personal take, but I thought Gray Zabel, the left guard for the Seahawks, was awesome, like immense. And they gave him a 60. I legitimately have no idea what the hell that's about. And then Mykel got this low grade, and I'm like, I don't know. They used him in like five different ways. He seemed to hold up pretty well in all of them. Like, we're watching football in a very different way from PFF.
I didn't even see the grade. That's insane.
It really just does not make sense to me. And it's an easy thing for folks who aren't going to, and I don't recommend anyone do this, by the way. It's an easy thing for folks who aren't going to pull up NFL Pro, type in Mykel Williams, and watch all of those snaps again and again and again. But that's what coaches do.
Yeah,
right?
These are strange. Wow, these are okay. Yeah.
It was a bizarrely graded game for both sides, by the way.
Yeah, that's strange.
Like, the idea that Gray's able, and I had to make, let's be honest here, it's two or three texts. I'm not calling anybody on Gray's able. But I had to send two or three texts to people who offensive line acumen I really trust and who I knew are such dorks about this that they had watched it. And two of them got back to me, and they were both like, he was awesome. Like, what? And I'm like, and I just send the PFF screenshot, and they're like, what? Like, I am flabbergasted. I understand that there's a big difference between the way that Chris Forrester grades Jake Brendel and the way PFF grades.
Like, is this true? Darnold was graded as a top five.
I mean, it's laughable to me. Darnold was not good. I mean, it was limited, right? They didn't put the ball in his hands very much. He made one really good play on that broken play where he hit JSN when JSN's sliding on his knees across the middle of the field. He put a ball right on the money.
He's graded as the eighth eighth best quarterback last week.
I mean, it's just, I don't know what they're doing over there, and I really dislike it because I can't use it now as a cheat sheet. Like, I can't now.
It used to be a good reference point for, like, was somebody, like, what's somebody's clear skill set? You know, like, is this guy, you know, if you're looking for, like, late window free agency, or you're trying to find a guy that fills a need. Now it's just like completely unreliable. Like it's a total mess.
I mean, it's actually really disappointing because I don't want to grade every player every week, and I will not grade every player
we'll do it
for the 49ers, and we'll do it off of the two or three previous games of the team they're about to play because, again, we're sick. But I want to be able to say, okay, who do I need to look at here? Weak link, strong link on these upcoming teams. And if I can't get that information without now having to do some damn reporting, like that sucks. That's a lot of time that I don't have. That's a PFF rant. Let's get back to McCorkle. McCorkle, 8 interceptions, 8 touchdowns last year, 36.6 QBR for the Jaguars.
Bad. He looked bad. I just watched it. I just watched it today.
I know. Like what? I didn't check the PFF score, but there had been this rumor, this innuendo floating around that like McCorkle was actually pretty good for the Jags last year.
No,
he was good for Brian Thomas Jr. He was good for him. Everyone else, he was not good for, including the Jaguars.
I watched it, and my first instinct was actually a bet suggestion, which is, I couldn't find it yet because I don't think it's out. I think they don't put out like player props until the day or so before the game.
Yeah.
Or I mean, maybe the day of. Luke Farrell, whatever the number is for receptions, I would expect him to catch at least 3 or 4 passes because he was feeding their tight ends a ton last year.
We talking Brenton Strange.
And they still had Evan Engram and Farrell. Yeah. Like the amount of passes that went to their tight ends. Literally, there's a stretch where I was just watching tape against the Jaguars. He threw like 12 straight passes to tight ends. Like they're just going check down, check down, check, 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 check. That's all he's doing.
Isn't it so good that they have George? Oh, wait. The Kittle thing just looms so big. I know it's kind of been pushed to the side because of the Brock thing, as well it should. Right. But this offense had 7 points until late in the game.
Well, remember my prediction that if he had 2 touchdowns, they would win? He had 1. So it got a little string.
It got a little dicey there. And then
Todd just got the other one. So I guess that should have been.
Yeah, no, that Jake Todd. I mean, this is the thing. George Kittle is replaceable. You just need to use 2 men to do it. So here comes the 12 personnel that we've been talking about. The problem is you don't get to play 12 men. This isn't Canadian football.
Right.
So you don't have, and we talked about this with McCaffrey and how important it was with the Seattle defense. Like, you don't have now a versatile player. You don't have a chess piece. You don't have a fulcrum. You don't have a keystone, whatever word you want to do. Like, George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey can do both. And being able to do both puts defenses in conflict. Now you just have McCaffrey.
Right.
And by the way, I mean, you could just, we'll talk about this in a moment. Like, a lot of the same stuff that took away outside zone from Seattle, it's coming this week. It's coming this week. So now you really just have McCaffrey as a pass catcher. You have 2 tight ends who, if you were to somehow merge them, might.
Pretty good.
I mean, pretty good. Not George Kittle, but pretty good.
No. Pretty good, but not anywhere near Kittle.
You get those sweet Tonjes hands, those jump balls. And then, by the way, the most improbable catch of the season, Reek Woolen. Boy,
I'm just
mentally,
to me, it's just, I'm just preparing like it's Ross Dwelly and Charlie Warner.
I could not believe that they didn't sign Ross Dwelly. So I asked Kyle in the presser yesterday, I'm like, are you guys going to take on another tight end? First off, their roster is so crunched that they weren't sure if they were going to be able to get in another quarterback.
Right, and I think, have they added Pinheiro to the active roster, or is he on practice squad? Okay, I thought they were just going to practice squad bump him.
No, it's Kittle out. You know what?
Yes.
Let's double check that. I don't know. My understanding was, you might be right. Take a look at that, because Kittle going to IR opened up a spot. Purdy's still on the roster. They dropped Robbie Chosen from the practice squad.
Yeah, he's on the roster. He's on the roster.
Okay. So they have a spot on the practice squad that they can add to, which I guess they got the tight end, Arizona State tight end, for that. I was stunned that they didn't just go and get Ross Dwelly out of the broom closet, which is where I presume he's been, like hiding Tom Hanks right. terminal style somewhere. It's just ridiculous. And then, you know, Benally saying, I didn't get the full Lynch experience this morning because life, but they're not adding a QB. I would consider adding a quarterback.
Or they're not adding a quarterback right now because they actually can't roster-wise. They're unable to.
I mean, this is a continuation of what I was talking about at the end of the preseason. Like, they were scrambling to put together a cogent 53. Scrambling. And that was a big red flag to me. They are at a point where, you know, and you can ask Brock Purdy, like, sometimes you have to scramble because the play was broken before it even started. And they are currently scrambling to figure out how to put together a cogent 53. And sometimes when you're scrambling, you bust your toe and miss 4 to 5 weeks. Like, this is
concerning. That's the thing. Mac can't scramble. Like, I mean,
3.3 yards per carry. I heard somebody say that he's a pretty good scrambler. They haven't watched him run recently. I think he's a smart scrambler.
I do love watching him run because it makes me think. Sometimes you watch an athlete and you go, all right, I'm faster than him. And I feel confident about that about Mac Jones. I'm like, oh, I move better than him.
Mac Jones runs like
paralysis demon type dream. Like, oh, no, someone's behind you and they're catching you and you can't move because you're stuck in quicksand. That's how he runs.
Now, that's a good one. Here's how Mac Jones runs. He runs the way that you run when the timer on the crosswalk is running low and you see the car.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of half scoot.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Scoot that's how he runs everywhere. Yeah. He scoots. I think he's smart about when to do it, but he better be because otherwise he'd die. Like, if he wasn't smart about it, he'd be a dead man. He's a bigger boy, too. He carries a little extra something. I think we all saw that photo of him. I mean, listen, I'm not complaining about that. I think that your quarterback should have a little bit of heft to him. Holds up well when your left tackle's giving up 10 pressures and he's supposed to be the good one. I want to get into the Saints defense here real fast.
Okay,
Jake.
Go for it.
You and I, we don't agree on everything, but we did agree that Brandon Staley would have been a really good option for the 49ers after the Steve Wilks debacle. And that clearly did not manifest because he wasn't hired as DC. He was brought in as some sort of like special advisor. I don't know what the hell he did all year. He just sort of got the Shanahan sparkle on him and then went along his merry way.
Yep.
What he is doing, and we only have one game of evidence here, but what he has done with the Saints is what the 49ers should have done. I think that was a beautifully coordinated game, and it was deeply reminiscent of the last time that Brandon Staley was a full-time defensive coordinator, which was for the dominant 2020 LA Rams. 2020 LA Rams, what was it, 4.5 yards per pass attempt, 17 pass touchdowns, and elite run defense. And the way they did that is what the Saints are doing right now. And it's a lot of what you saw this past week from Mike McDonald. So Brandon Staley, former outside linebackers coach for the Bears, this is how he got on the Shanahan-McVay radar. He was the outside linebackers coach for Vic Fangio when Vic Fangio was the head coach of the Bears. He took away outside zone from Sean McVay. And from that point on, Sean McVay's like, I got to get this guy.
Yep.
He gets him for that 1 year. He has Aaron Donald playing nose guard. They turn into the most dominant defense in quite a long time. I know that Kyle says he blacked out 2020. Don't black those two games that the Niners got their ass kicked by the Rams out. And then at least their defense gets a head coaching job with the Chargers in over his head. And then he comes to the 49ers and it doesn't have any power or control or anything. He just thinks about football. I don't know what that was all about. Maybe he was just there to help Kyle. Frankly?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. It was, and the whole dynamic made it seem like Sorensen was uncomfortable the whole time because he kept getting asked, are you really the DC or is it him? No one really knew.
When it's all said and done, it was pretty obviously Nick Sorensen because now that Brandon Staley has his operation, right, and in with Kellen Moore, you know that they're not stepping on each other's toes in that regard. They've gone back to the kind of defense that made Sean McVay go crazy, the kind of defense that had Kyle Shanahan just say, I don't want to have to face this guy. Let's just put him on our staff and stash him. They're going to the kind of defense that it dates back. I was trying to find the genesis of this. So it's the five-man front, right? That's what it looks like. It's really a three-man front at 4-0-4. Four technique, zero technique, four technique. With outside linebackers filling in as edge rushers, and then that should clear up space for the linebackers and the safeties to just get where they need to be. It's a lot of, again, what Saleh did, where you saw a lot of Michael lining up at four technique, even as a strong side defensive end. The 404 is a brainchild of Chip Kelly. Yeah. He had to invent a defense to stop his own offense, which was that wide zone RPO. This was back at Oregon. So he invented the 404. Staley stole it from him, brought it to Fangio, put it in with Fangio's 3-4. Again, turned in a dominant defense in 2020. And I'm looking at this Saints defense, and I'm like, wow. These guys, they don't have all the talent yet, but this is – you're not going to be able to run outside zone against this
team. Yeah, they're tough. They're tough. I mean, I was watching it, and my notes were that it was just – they're tough up front. 92 is tough to move.
Yep.
Granderson and Jordan on the edge were outstanding. I mean, they've just got a lot of beef up front. Brian Bresee.
Brian Bresee out of Clemson's really good. Nathan Shepard looked awesome.
Gottschall looks like revived.
He looks awesome. And they're using him, right? They're not using him as an every down guy. They mix in Nathan Shepard, who really flashed. Jonathan Bullard's a solid pro. Breece.
Yeah.
Is a really good player. And then you can slide Cam Jordan in or out based on what it is you want to do. You got Justin Reed behind clearing stuff up. DeMario Davis at
DeMario
this juncture.
DeMario Davis is timeless. Pete Werner was pretty good too. I mean,
can I just run off a couple of numbers for you here?
Yeah.
Here's the Cardinals outside zone runs with running backs against the Saints last week by yardage. 3, -2, 1, 3, 2, 52, 0, 7, 4, 2, 1, 7. That's it. And the 52, by the way, Justin Reed hit Trey Benson, who, by the way, looks awesome, hit Trey Benson in the backfield, and then Isaac Yadam took out Cam Jordan, who was going to make the tackle, turned into 52 yards.
Yeah. So what I'll say is I did see some weaknesses in their secondary. I think you can attack them. There's a lot over the middle of the field that I think they can get. The 49ers should be able to get. Now, it's a question of, like, if you don't establish a run at all, if you can't get to your play action game, like, how effective is Mac going to be? Are you going to be able to attack that? And a lot's really reliant on Pearsall getting open, who had some outstanding plays and then got clamped at times. Like, there were some times the Seahawks just had a perfect plan for him, seemed to know exactly what route he was running. On that one pick, Josh Job just ran the route for him, seemed to know exactly what he was doing. But, like, so you're relying on Pearsall, and then, like, you kind of need Kendrick Bourne suddenly because, like, the connection with Mac Jones and the fact that, like, Juwan Jennings may or may not play, and even if he does, he's not separating.
Right.
So ideally you sort of have Jennings as a slot receiver again, where he's at his best. And then maybe you have something if Bourne is like a little bit of his former self and Pearsall's humming. Like, that could be, at least in this game where you just need, I don't know, what do you need to score 21 points to win?
Well, I mean, this game started as a 7.5-point Niners favorite. That obviously has dropped significantly. I saw it at 3 this morning. I imagine it gets down to 2-5. You shouldn't be anywhere near a number on this one. You should be playing the under. If you believe in the 49ers defense, you should play the under because it is Spencer Rattler against Robert Saleh, as simplistic as that is. I'd like.
And Rattler doesn't see it, man.
No, he doesn't. He rips it. Doesn't. He can rip it, but he can't see it. So
yeah, fun plays. Fun plays can a little bit of scoot, but he's not seeing the field.
And listen, it's not to say that this Saints defense is some top 10 unit or anything, but they are fundamentally, they are coordinated by the man who knows how to stop what it is that Sean and Kyle want to do fundamentally. And they have to get back to fundamentals because they have a backup quarterback who can't scramble under center. So that's like danger zone to me, that they're going to go five-man front. They don't have to get to Mac Jones because they can play a bunch of man behind. And last week they played cover 0, 5%, cover 1, 22%. Cover 2, which I consider a man. I know that there's debatable aspects of that, really. Is it cover 4 palms or whatever? They were in man 38% conservatively last year per the Fantasy Pros data. Watching them, it seemed like that was about right. They mix it up, right? I imagine they're just going to be in man the whole goddamn game because they don't fear Mac running on them the same way that they fear Kyler running on them, which is just... Stop the outside zone, force McCaffrey into just 100 swing passes again. You don't have to worry about Kittle in the flat, which is sort of where you're most susceptible in man because he's a man beater. And bracket Pearsall and dare somebody else to beat you. Like, it feels like a pretty simple game plan. And it's not to say that the Niners can't execute against it, but it's going to be grinding bones to get points in this game.
I'm with you. And I feel like this... I don't even think I gave my takeaways from the previous game because I missed. But like,
should I play the Jake's take sound?
Sure. No, because I was going to talk about Brian Robinson and Upton Stout and some other guys that I noticed.
Let's talk about them.
Yeah, Brian Robinson. I was not impressed.
No,
I was not impressed with him at all. Almost fumbled like twice. He looked slow. He didn't really break anything off.
Can't move him around a formation either.
Just kind of a battering ram, which is fine, but like you would expect a battering ram to break off a couple tackles. I don't think he broke off of one.
He did. He had one. He had one. Like a 9-yard run on first down around midfield where he bounced off of somebody and got 9 yards. And that was a legitimately impressive run amid eight average.
And it's still valuable to like stay McCaffrey, but this is a game where like you might just have to. I mean, you'll still mix in Robinson, I think, because you need. You're going to have a lot of inside runs that are just going to go nowhere, and you need someone to take the brunt of that, and it shouldn't really be Christian. Mm-hmm. But
you don't have a choice. This is what I keep getting back to. If you have a five-man front, you don't have a choice because you need to have somebody who can win in man, knowing that you're going to bracket the one guy at receiver. Wide receivers last week, Mac Jones is coming into a game where the wide receivers that he'll have available to him caught a total of 4 passes last week. They were all Ricky Pearsall. And they were all, like, 3 of them were on anticipatory routes.
Okay, real quick, people are mentioning Garendo. You think they should just put him in the slot and just let him run clear outs? Just let him run as fast as he possibly... I mean, Mac, I don't know if Mac can reach him, but, you know, let's see what happens.
This is where we're at, though, right? They just traded for a guy who was the Garendo replacement. And now they're like, I'm not telling anyone they're wrong about this. It's like, I don't know, throw Garendo out there. Like, now we are officially at throwing shit on the wall time. It's week 2.
They should just go pistol. They should just go pistol.
They might.
And then read option with Garendo and Juice and McCaffrey and Mac Jones running it.
Jake, we have once a year, well, 2022, last year, and now this year, we have suggested triple option. Here we are, week 2.
I think
triple
we just
option.
Get bored, and the personnel just gets so weird. You're like, do something weird with it.
I appreciate this take from Tony. Let Garendo run the leak with Juice or whatever it is they do out of 44. Like, you can't do that because Juice, the way that he gets free is you think he's doing something else. You think he's blocking.
I was literally going to say, you think he's blocking and timing. He's slow. Like, the pace of him getting out on the routes allows him to be open because there's a little bit of a patience to it that Garendo's just going to run full speed and then get covered up by a safety.
No, he's just running screamer routes out of the backfield. Like, it's not a good play. And against man-to-man, like, I don't know if he can break in or out on a route. Like, I've never seen him do it effectively. I know he can do a swing.
Yeah. Also, I should mention offensive line. Trent, what's up? What's up with that?
My benefit of the doubt for Trent is that he hadn't played a meaningful football game in nearly a calendar year.
And also tweaked his ankle early on in that game, it looked like.
Here's the inside scoop. I mean, he was walking around with a limp in the locker room. Like, he was trying to hide it after he noticed me noticing. No.
That ankle has been bugging him for years now.
I mean, a legitimate suggestion by Larry on the stream on Monday, he was like, I don't think that this McKivitz contract doesn't have anything to do with Trent. Like, we need to get this done now because we can't lose two of our tackles in one offseason. We can only lose one. And if that means we got to pay a little more up front, so be it, because we cannot go into this offseason and lose two. Trent Williams is a football god. If anyone deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's Trent Williams.
Oh, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. But that was very difficult. That was the worst I've seen him in a long time.
It's the worst I've ever seen him. I mean, I'm not going through all the Washington tape, but there's never been. He's had a couple of screamers in a game against the Packers that wasn't great. Like, he's had a couple of where you're like, wow, Trent Williams looks.
And then
like
the next week, he's just dominant again.
He's never looked this bad. And
he looked unbalanced too. Like, he was slipping and
he got away with a couple of holds too. Like, that's where the power of 71 comes into play, because there were a couple plays where he was like horizontal and holding.
Yeah.
And Brock is kind of going out of the pocket the other direction. And the ref, I mean, you can see the ref, he's staring right there. And he's like, well, it's Trent Williams. He couldn't possibly be holding. Also, we got to get this game on. If I call holding on Trent every time, we're going to be screwed. It is a, Yeah.
Not a great game for that, by the way, for Trent.
Yeah. Because of all the different looks and stand up, and here's Cam Jordan. Hope you enjoy power.
Yeah, and by the way, what I thought of the rest of the offensive line, Barch had some moments where I went wow, and then he had some other moments where I went wow. I would say more of the negative than the positive, but I did see the vision. Like, I did see how he could clean stuff up. But there were some really bad. It was a lot of boom bust. A lot of boom bust with him. Brendel deeply underwhelmed me. Pooney was like, okay, and then got cooked at times by 91.
Pooney's still dealing with that knee injury.
He's not right yet.
He's not right. And he's a good player, but he's not the kind of player that you can build an offensive line off of. Like, the whole offensive line is built off of the fact that you can one-on-one protect with Trent Williams on the left side and play action. Like, you can bootleg, you can do whatever you want, because Trent's going to win every rep, so you can slide away from the problems. If he's the problem, the dam has broken.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how this offense is going to score points over the next 4 weeks. It's going to be very, very, very difficult. You think about the amount, again, with the full PFF, like, Brock grading out is like 20th, like, the amount of stuff that he had to do just to get space to deliver the ball. And did he throw some absolutely idiotic, awful, insane passes that are inexcusable, including the game winner? That was like,
just what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
Jake, there has never been, that game was the epitome of the Brock Purdy, Freaky Friday, Russ Wilson soul take.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Everything around his team is chaos all the time. The offensive line just disintegrates in front of him. He makes two of the most boneheaded plays you've ever seen. Like, have you ever played? You look like Jameis Winston out there. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and he's just throwing balls up that, like, should be 10 yards out of bounds and are, like, landing, like, almost interceptable.
What was it, 13% catch probability on that one? Yeah. I mean, if Tariq Woolen just decides to not be a dipshit for one play, the game is over. But
this thing where he just stops moving and he just forgets he's playing. He unplugs his controller. He did that with the Pearsall catch down the sideline where it went for 45, and he was like, he got cooked, but because he's athletic and long, he caught up and then stopped running.
Pearsall had a touchdown in the flat in the red zone.
Oh, yeah.
Where Wolin was totally beat, he stopped moving, and then he got into the play at the last second and used his extendo gadget arms.
No feel whatsoever, but just all athleticism to make up for
it. And it's like, dude, like I can't imagine how Mike McDonald goes through those meetings.
Well, I think he said, people asked if he's going to start next week, and he said, we'll see.
Yeah, we will see, because like that dude has the physical traits to be as
good
as anybody.
You were high on him. I was like, I don't know, man.
I just thought that they had better coaching than that. Yeah. I just thought that they could get him to focus for the entirety of a 6-second play. I thought that was a pretty reasonable ask. But no, I was wrong. We both look like assholes. Reek Wolin and Dieter tied together at the hip. He eats for free in the Bay. And again, that game could loom huge if Brock can come back anytime soon.
Right.
Because you need that division game. You need a division game. Those count for two. I mean, legitimately, let's just bring it up right now. Kirk Cousins trade possible, if not probable.
Nah,
it isn't going to happen. But
goodness. God damn, would that be funny?
I mean, listen, we might as well get the full gambit of former Kyle love interests in house, right? Like, let's do this thing. He got stuck with Jimmy Garoppolo. He got stuck with Brock Purdy. He got stuck with Trey Lance. Let Kyle do what he wants to do, which is have a Nick Mullins, Mac Jones, Kirk Cousins, somebody who understands his language that he doesn't feel like he has to translate for. I guess that's the beauty of Brock, is that you don't have to and you have athleticism. But, like, my goodness. The Mac thing, Mac is built for an offense that is no longer with us. Mac is built for Debo Diggs as your offense.
Yeah, quick timing, deliver 3 seconds
or
less.
Get the ball out of your hands, right? And Brock Purdy is built for this team. That's not just accidental, right? There is a level of, we can lean on Brock because Brock can extend plays. Brock can make something out of nothing. We really need that right now because we have a stars and scrubs roster, a boomer bust roster. We got some real questions on the offensive line as per usual. Like, that's the kind of quarterback you need when you're sort of floating in the middle, as the Niners are at this juncture in time, trying to rebuild a foundation for the future. Mac Jones is not that guy. Mac Jones is you need a super team around him, and he'll just play good point guard and get the ball to where it needs to go.
Right.
He's Chris Paul.
I wonder how much they adjust, because there was a lot of slow developing play action, no one open. You're going to have to dink and dunk your way down the field.
I wonder how much under center they are. Like, they might get medieval on this shit. Like, they might go full Matt Ryan 2017 playbook, right? And just Pearsall is Julio Jones, and you just pray that works. Like, I think you're going to get like 30 touches from Christian McCaffrey in this game.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be in a heavy set pretty much the entire game, trying to create a facsimile of George Kittle with two men. I think Pearsall is just going to get peppered, but they're going to have to run him on slant routes, and he might die. He might.
This is a
brutal one. And the only saving grace is the fact that there's no reason to think that the Saints can move the ball either.
Right. You're like, okay, all right. Well, we might be able to shut down Spencer Rattler, and he might also throw two picks. And there might be 6 turnovers in this game, because who knows what's going to happen.
I mean, we're kind of back. I mean, Kyle always is saying, like, whoever wins the turnover battle wins the game. And it's like, duh. But also, like, kind of not in this day and age.
Right.
This game, absolutely. Like, in the battle of mid, who is going to be the better crappy quarterback?
They should just have like a flying V situation, where it's just
from
a cone.
Wing T to flying V.
Yeah, it's just a cone. It's a mass of men running all together in a V shape, and just maybe it can get 4 yards a carry every play. It's basically the tush push, but from shotgun.
There we go.
What I'm describing.
I'm just fascinated to see what this offense looks like, because going back to the Moose Johnson thing, if Mac Jones is in fact good enough, that's a real issue. That's a real problem for the 49ers. I don't think it's going to look like that. I think that we're all going to see how much Brock has been covering up for this team for the last year and a half. But if Mac Jones goes out there and looks like serviceable, oh my God, 253 is going to be repeated constantly.
I don't think anyone's worried about that. I think
Moose Johnson is. The man on the seventh Fox crew is.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just pray Mac just delivers a few balls, keeps the ball out of trouble, does the Sam Darnold that Darnold did last game where he throws for 80 yards and grades out as the eighth best quarterback in the league. So stupid.
But, I mean, yeah, listen, I'm somewhat – I would be more bullish on Mac if he had more weapons, right? Like, I don't –
agreed.
It's not an assault on Mac. It's an assault on the fact that he's got no one to flip and throw it to.
I think what's intriguing is that – I don't know if it's intriguing or just vaguely notable, is that he'll have two former players that he's played with in Kendrick Bourne and Luke Farrell, that he played with Farrell last year. He played with Bourne in New England. So he at least like knows those guys. And then Pearsall is like the clear number one. And so he goes, all right, I've got Pearsall as my number one. And then two guys I know. So maybe I can dink and dunk my way down the field with those guys. But yeah. Do you have a gut feel in this game? Do we want to make a prediction here before we get out?
I mean, yeah. I mean, under. And, like, just the sloppiest New Orleans shit ever. Just absolutely definitive New Orleans afternoon, like, weekend. Like, just folks falling over left and right. Like, this is going to be a disgusting football game to watch.
You want to know my score prediction?
I'd love to hear it.
I'm going to say 19-16, 49ers win. Eddie Pinheiro kicks four field goals.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, I was thinking more in like the 16-15 range.
right.
Like there might be a safety in this game. And like one aspect that we haven't brought up that does need to be noted, just so that everyone has this in the back of their heads when they watch the game. I personally don't think Kellen Moore's a very good offensive coordinator. I've never found his stuff to be interesting or inspiring. But he got a Super Bowl ring, so he can't be, helps to have Jalen Hurts, who is the head coach, the quarterback, and the offensive coordinator of the Eagles. But, and just the coolest dude. Is Jalen Hurts like the coolest person on earth?
He's not. He's actually not cool at all.
No.
And I mean it. Cool. No, because he's like, oh, I'm so cool. It's like corny to the point that he's like, I just don't care, man. He's like speaks in pure platitudes. I can't deal with it.
I am not going to disagree with the fact that he might be a cornball, but that dude is unflappable.
Oh, yeah. No question about that.
He is as cool as a cucumber, man. And that matters when you have Nick Sirianni and Big Dom calling your plays. And you can't tell me that Big Dom isn't calling the plays. They have a headset. They gave him a headset. So there's that, right? So Kellen Moore comes from that. Pretty good. They were watching Indiana Pacers film in offensive meetings with the Saints this offseason because they want to be a tempo team. They want to go, go, go. They know that they don't have the personnel. So what they're going to do is they're just going to go full.
They're trying to do what Chip Kelly did.
Here we are, back to Chip Kelly. Exactly. Yeah. Chip Kelly. Three references.
Get up to the line. Get up to the line. We're going to outwork them with, like that's literally what you do in like fourth grade when you're a worse team. You just do conditioning and you out tempo the other team.
Awesome. That's what I'm saying. That's what they're going to try to do. And we actually, I think, saw the most susceptible moments of this 49ers defense in week one was when, whether it was, late in the quarter, but there was a hurry up, just drive for the Seahawks, where they got the look that they wanted, which was Mykel and Yetur Gross-Matos in the middle of the interior, and they said, you're going to stay like that. We got Upton, Stout, Yetur Gross-Matos, and Mykel Williams in very important positions against the run game, and we're going to put Zach Charbonnet on the field, and we're actually going to move the football. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Saints, who have a passable offensive line and a quarterback that they should not trust, if that's what they tried to do. Yeah, doesn't mean it's going to score a lot of points, but I think that's where they'll find success.
Going to keep funneling it to Juwan Johnson and Alvin Kamara, who is somehow only 30, who I thought he was 34 years old.
Well, now his legs weigh the same. Have you ever heard that
story? Oh, yeah, yeah. He evened out out
his leg weight.
Love that.
And had a monster year. The Saints are just a team that is, it's almost like a non-playable character on the schedule. No one ever thinks about them. They're just there. And yet, I'll pick the Saints to win. I think karma flips back from that Seahawks game, which they probably should have lost. They probably should win this one and somehow lose it. That's my guess.
That's a great guess. I'm going to say they win this one, and then they get ripped by the Cardinals. They get destroyed.
Yeah.
James Conner runs through their soul. But that's for next week.
I'll say this. Trey Benson.
Both of them.
Looks better. Trey Benson looks better. He was like my guy in that running back class 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I really like he looks awesome. Patience pays off, and he's a very patient runner. He sees it.
Should we hit some comments before we get out of here?
I think that's a great idea, Jake. You want to throw them up?
Let's see. I just wanted to mention the Steely Dan. Steely Dan comments. Long live Steely Dan.
Thank you, Tony. If you ever want a good 20-minute sojourn from your life, watch Steely Dan auditioning people to do the guitar solo on Peg. And how they had this abstract avant-garde notion of what it should sound like, and they brought in 60 different guitarists to try it until one of them just hit the notes that they had in their drug-addled mind.
Oh, yeah.
Steely Dan kicks ass. Fusion That's jazz awesome. For life.
Gabriel McCorkle Jones revenge game against the Jags. That's also my prediction, which is to say he's going to play badly and they're going to win.
This is so much better than it was last year. We can actually have a reasonable conversation about this team possibly winning a football game. And I'll repeat myself, perhaps to the point of nauseum. I don't think McCorkle will be the reason they win or lose this game. I think it's the people around McCorkle. Just understanding what he is, you need the other players around him to elevate. And I don't think there's enough players around him to elevate this offense to the point where this game should be. Right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm completely with you. I think what will win the 49ers this game is defense and spooking Spencer Rattler and turning the ball over 3 times.
Which they could very well do.
That's how I think they'd go about it. And then Mac just has two bad fuck-ups, the Saints have more.
It's not about if he can make plays. It's about if he can prevent, as you said, total
disaster. Yeah.
And you have to think that he can. The last thing I want to see is in the first two drives, Mac just out there going full Jags and slinging that thing. Cause then it's over. There's no way you win a game if Mac Jones is out there being I'm going to prove you all wrong.
Although Isaac Yadam's out there. So maybe they'll cook. Let's hit a few more of these. I was surprised Saleh was dropping Williams so much into coverage. Actually kind of worked. So much for all gas, no break. I know, he's just awesome. Using him in every way possible. And it's funny because, there was sort of this idea that Saleh was just going to keep it incredibly milquetoast and whatever, and then it's all about being sound. But, no, he's actually evolved a little bit and is trying to make things difficult, which is what a coordinator does.
I was so impressed. Listen, you have to try things. And it's always going to look a little bit bizarre when you come into a new season, right? Because you've had a lot of time to think about that matchup. But I was so impressed with how he called it and how he sequenced it.
And I'm with you.
What they did, the cover one robber stuff is money. It's money. It's a great play for that defense. And it doesn't work if you don't have Fred Warner and you don't have D. Winters playing out of his gourd. 100 out of 100 for D. Winters in that game. And this is, if people want to get in, I didn't think Alfred Collins had a very good game. I didn't think C.J. West had a very good game. I thought Yetur Gross-Matos had a nice one. I thought that Jordan Elliott had some absolutely disastrous reps, but did put some positive stuff on film. I thought Kalia Davis had a wonderful game and deserves more reps. All this to say, it wasn't a particularly great defensive line game if you're thinking about flash plays and stats and all that. But when you think about what it is they needed to do in order for D. Winters and Fred Warner to have the games that they had, which were superlative games for both of them, they did their job.
They held up and let them fly to the ball.
They did a really good. That did not happen for a single game last year.
No.
Not a single one. And yes, it requires Robert Saleh to bring a five-man front, a six-man front, a seven-man front, and to go a little bit Mike Zimmer, and to go a little bit Mike McDonald, and to go a little bit, you know, Brian Flores, to try out some stuff. It requires some aggressiveness. But after watching this team, not just with Sorensen, but even with Wilkes, just go, hey, we're going to rush four.
Right.
And every now and again, we might bring somebody in the
We're going to dial up a blitz that's going to be incredibly obvious and everybody knows what's coming.
Once upon a time in Hollywood meme. Just like he's blitzing. It's bad. So yeah. It is good to see somebody being like, hey, we understanding the circumstance, which is we don't have the kind of dudes to just win one-on-one. We can't rush four and expect to get home, because they're going to throw a second guy on Bosa. And we have a kid at strong side. And we have a bunch of defensive tackles that no one can rely upon. Maybe one of them is going to have a good game and have a disaster the next time. Like, none of them are reliable players. So what do we have to do? We got to get weird.
Yep.
And that can backfire in a huge way if you catch the wrong team, in this case, on the right day for them. I don't think that's Sunday. I just not that quarterback. Not that one. And I don't think it's Arizona. I'd be very worried against the Rams, but yeah. I think the next three games, if you need the defense to do it, and Bob Saleh is going to get weird with it, like, as weird as this sounds, because it's the inverse of what it was supposed to be, like, it stands a chance. It stands a chance because they were able to hold up in pretty tough circumstances, all things
I'm
considered.
I'm going to hit three more on the way out here. Do you think Mustafa and Siegel are too similar? It was one game hard to know if Siegel's as good in coverage. He's great coming downhill. I actually think it's a perfect match. I think Siegel's outstanding in coverage. I think Mustafa's probably better than advertised, but Mustafa's a guy you want around the ball more, and Siegel can cut down everything else. I think it's a perfect pairing, and I wouldn't worry about that. Upton Stout, did you review Stout's performance yet? I did not, but what I saw is some total disaster, but that was mostly what happens with young corners, which is you get grabby and you're feisty and you're like trying to be hyper aggressive. And I did see a few good plays, like actually trailing in coverage and playing really well, but he's going to take time. Like he was a little too amped up, going to have to reel it back. I think he's going to be fine. Last thing, Jordan Watkins back at practice, that will help. And then Rishi says Watkins not getting a catch in his first game back. Where I'm at with Watkins is I would expect nothing from him immediately, but they are so desperate for speed that like he might suddenly have a role in this offense that might surprise all of us.
I'll say this about the Watkins thing. Pearsall's a willing blocker, but he's not a particularly good one. Okay, that matters. If you're going to be in a lot of two receiver sets, the second guy has to be a good blocker, because you need that guy to help seal the extreme outside if you want to actually run the ball. Now, Kyle can just abandon his offensive principles in a game with a backup quarterback and an offensive line that's porous and decide we're going to be a gap team and we're going to attack the 1.5 gap system that they run over in New Orleans, and we're just going to hit them with a bunch of trap blocks and power runs and all this stuff. He could, and frankly, that might be the play. But it's such a departure that you can't imagine it's going to happen over the course of a week. And so if you're going to run zone, be it inside or outside, you need to have receivers that can give you some serious blockage. It's why Cooper Kupp, even though he's totally washed as a receiver, was playing so much for Seattle last week, because he was driving dudes 20 yards back on the exterior. And
although Stout got him once.
He did get him once. He also Stout against the run game. His name did not. It was not nominative of determinism. Let's put it that way. In that he was so washed out so quickly that you can't even like discredit him for getting washed out. Like, he wasn't even in the frame. He was so quickly eliminated that it's like there was a couple of reps where like you're like, oh my god, that's like a horrendous run fit for him, because he didn't even come close to getting near the gap, much less missing it. So they're going to keep doing that until he's more than 170 pounds, I guess. Like, I don't know how he's supposed to fix that. You know, that's what made K'Wan Williams, that little ball of muscle, so impressive, was that he was such a good run.
I think it's just timing and craft and getting around blocks in a way that your size, you use the small size to your advantage, but that'll take him time. And
So going back to the Pearsall thing, like I legitimately think that they're going to be doing a lot more Gage in this game because Gage is of the whatever they have left, the best blocker. And if Jennings can play, they'll keep him in there because they need his blocking. That's where my
Horn was a good blocker from what I remember.
He's so skinny.
He's fine.
But yeah, he was a willing blocker. I think he added weight. I think Pearsall's a willing blocker too. But can he drive somebody? I don't know. I mean, we'll find out.
But it's going to be a slop fest, folks. And we can't wait for you to join us.
We'll talk about it after Sunday's game.
We will. We will.
Or contest. Should we just call it a contest? I'm not sure.
Contest, sure.
A game implies some level of fun. But they will, in fact, play football or contest football on Sunday. And then we'll talk about it afterwards as we maybe have a drink or two.
That's right.
What we're going to need after that one. If I'm smoking a cigarette, you know what happened. We just come back and I'm just like, oh my God, it's not a celebratory cigarette.
No, it's going to be painful.
It's going to be painful. Right. All right. That's enough of the show. Jake, tell them where they can find you.
Find me on the Hutch Report. I'm going to start having some good stuff up now that I'm actually back and overcoming illness. Join us.
Don't overcome the illness that makes you a sicko. Bye.
Appreciate it.